You're listening to the Home Improvement Show on News Talk Radio, CJAD 800.
Morning. 9:06. Nice to have you here with us on a Saturday morning. And Walter Assey from Renovco has found his way in despite the fog.
Yeah, I had to raise it.
Yeah, it can be tricky and potentially dangerous driving in the fog.
Actually, I was surprised. It was really foggy still. And yeah, it was a bit of a challenge, but it's nice and romantic. So
it's slowly lifting. We do have sunshine in the forecast, but it's been a tough go this morning with the fog out there. And remember to have your lights on if they're not already on out there on the roads. How was your week?
My week was full, busy. But good.
Good.
Get me out of troubles.
Keep you out of trouble. 514-790-0800 if you want to talk to Walter. Pick his brain. He's got all this experience when it comes to home renovation projects and things that you have to get done around the house. Give us a call again, 514-790-0800. Going to start with Abby, who's on the phone. Hi, Abby.
Hi, good morning.
Where are you calling us from this morning?
St. Andrews.
All right. And what do you want to talk? Oh, windows in the bathroom?
Yes.
Go ahead. You're on with Walter. Go ahead.
Thank you. Good morning, Walter. Thank you so much. So I have an old country cottage up north, and it used to be a sun porch, but it's now a bathroom. And I have four windows in there, which is three too many. So basically, it's like a solarium, but I want it to be a bathroom. So for privacy, I'd like to take out three of the very, very old windows. The condensation is terrible. They're really, really, really old. My question is, it's the type of windows that you can actually just pull out the glass. So I was wondering, if I just pulled out the glass, could I leave in the old metal frames? Can I just leave them in there and just board them up on the outside?
So this is a four-season bathroom?
Yes.
So probably not, because what you want to do is you want to take out the window and reframe the wall. So it's probably a 2x4 structure. You want to put some type of a fiber board or isoclad, depending of what you have on the outside right now, in that particular location. And
right,
then whatever exterior finish from the outside, fairing
right,
strip.
Which is aluminum siding, so it's a vinyl siding.
Correct. So you probably, chances are you have like a fiber board or a pressed wood, and you have fairing strips, and you have then you have the Tyvek, the fairing strips, and then the siding. From the other side, you're going to need to put the insulation and the vapor barrier. So,
right, of course.
Yeah, so what you really want is no thermal break. You want to make sure that it's really well insulated. And if you are going to keep a piece of metal there, what you're doing is just, you know, allowing something to bridge in and out without, you know, so it's going to create you all kind of things with mold and what have you.
Oh,
because
thank
there
you.
Will be a condensation. So,
right.
I mean, it's not really a big deal to take it out. Once you take out the panes, I mean, you literally have a couple of screws on each side that you have to unscrew.
Oh.
And then you just pop it out.
Oh,
and then,
cool.
You know, then you can reframe it. As a matter of fact, to be quite frank with you, it's probably even easier for the framer to do. Because now he's working wood with wood, and he's not working, you know, he's not trying to work with a frame that is not necessarily straight and so on and so forth. So he could build his 2x4s, they're going to be nice, straight, and plumb, and then he could work from that to insulate from the inside and to do the proper finishing from the outside. That's really, really the best way to do it.
I was going to try to do it myself, but do you think I should just have someone do it? Can things go wrong pretty quickly?
I mean,
if I'm doing it, they will.
Yeah. it's not difficult. You don't need to be like, I don't know how proficient you are or how, like, you know, how good you are with your hands, how handy you are, but it's not really difficult carpentry in the sense that the framing is fairly easy. You just measure it up and you put your frames. It's, you know, it's not really difficult if you're fairly handy. Mm-hmm. Where it can really go south is, you know, if you ask Ken for help, then we're going to have other issues.
So, Abby, this is a former sun porch that's now going to be a powder room, I guess.
Yes.
Oh, very good.
Where you're going to have some type of challenge would be from the outside, because now you want to try to, you know, it's to kind of get the two the aluminum siding from the outside to match, and so on and so forth. So that's where you it's going to be like, you know, you're probably going to have to take out some siding and go back up because
I already have the siding, so that's all good.
Okay, that's yeah. then that's really the more difficult part of the job. The rest is fairly easy.
Well, good.
Thank you so much for that.
You're welcome.
My pleasure.
Have a good weekend.
Bye bye.
Bye now. 9:11. She was nice. We're going to go to NDG, the Deej, as the kids say. Suzanne, is that you?
Yes, it is.
Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Oh, we're good. We're waiting for the fog to lift here and the sunshine to appear. So you want to talk about protecting concrete from trees?
Yes. We're having a contractor making us a big slab for a spa. The slab is going to be 6-inch thick of concrete. And we have a good foundation, really deep in 0¾ that we compacted. Now, we have trees. Our neighbors have trees, and there's trees around. How can I protect that slab on the long term? Should we put the root barriers, or should just the concrete is so thick it should be okay?
Are you talking about protecting the top of the concrete or the bottom?
No, the bottom, the roots are not going to lift it or shift it.
So you have some fairly large trees around?
Well, we have some, yes. Our neighbors have a short, not so big, but, you know, yes, they're fairly tall, like 40 feet. Hmm.
And how much are you excavating?
12-inch. We did the 12-inch, compacted 0¾, and we compacted every 4-inch.
Okay. What you could do, I mean, 12-inch should not be so much an issue for roots unless you have a really big tree. Mm-hmm. That is around, and that mm-hmm. that might cause you trouble for sure. But if you say the tree is small, and how far is it from the structure?
15 feet.
Oh yeah.
But then we have another one, my neighbor's tree there. That one is 5 feet.
5 feet, but is it also a smaller tree?
But it's a ginkgo.
Okay.
So it's a. The trunk is big, but the tree is not tall because it's been pruned.
Yeah, so I don't think that would be much of an issue. I mean, typically you run into these issues with these very big, huge trees, and that's one, you know, that's where we're going to have to avoid, we might have to go deeper and create like stronger forms and what have you. But in your case, I don't see forecasted to be a problem.
Okay.
What's there in that location now? Is it like
grass?
Grass. Okay. And is it heaving? Do you see any movement? Any evidence of movement in that area at all?
No, we couldn't see because there was grass. So
okay.
Our trees.
But when you walk on it,
trees.
Is it you know? Is it it wobbly up and down? Is it even?
No, it's clay, and it's really compacted, and we have grass on top, and the grass is doing well.
I don't believe that you're going to have an issue.
All right.
I really don't.
Okay. Hey, good news. Thank you very much.
Suzanne, remember when you start handing out those invitations, we'll give you the advice.
I'll think about you guys.
Thanks, Suzanne.
Bye.
Bye now. Exactly 9:15. If you want to grab a line now, one just freed up, talk to Walter, pick his brain, 514-790-0800.
You might just need to tighten a thingamajig on the whatchamacallit. This is the Home Improvement Show. On CJAD 800.
Indeed it is. And a line is open if you want to call and talk to Walter Assey. Free advice in the entire hour. Where are you going to get that? 514-790-0800. Jenny understands and is calling from St. Laurent. Hi, Jenny.
Hi.
Hi. You want to talk to Walter about, you have a rust situation in the garage?
Yes. My ceiling pipes in the garage are rusted. Will they eventually leak because of this, or do I have to do something?
Okay, so is it cast iron pipes?
Yes, I think so.
Okay, are these drain pipes or are they risers, like hot or cold water feed pipes?
Good question.
Okay, what's the diameter? Is it the big black pipe or?
No, it's not.
It's a small.
I think they're cast iron.
Okay, but is it small in diameter, the pipe?
Yes, it's not large.
Does it run horizontally or vertically?
It's horizontal.
Hmm.
Okay, so there's no vertical side to it, like it doesn't go down?
No.
So these are feed pipes. And how much rust do you have on it? Like, if you look at it, is it like, is the rust protruding through or?
Well, it's rusting. Do I have to sand it and paint it? Or it's not
It's not a question of you don't need to paint it. What you need to do is you need to see how far the rust is gone. It's gone into the actual pipe.
Yeah.
Okay. Now you can do a home remedies solution of combining different products to clean the rust off the pipe.
Okay.
And that will kind of get as much of the rust out, and you will see the extent of the damage to the pipe.
When rust
eats onto metal, for sure, there will be a time if it gets very advanced.
Okay, I haven't had any water coming through.
Okay.
Yet. Well,
That's correct. But I'm saying these are typically not thin pipes. So rust does not, you know, as soon as you see rust, it starts leaking. It doesn't work like that. But what you want to see is, number one, why the pipe is occurring. It's an inside location. So there might be condensation in your garage.
Okay, I have a radiator in my garage.
Okay.
And actually, I want to close the radiator off.
Okay.
I don't want it. I don't know where the lever is. Is there any way I can put something on it that I can close it?
Is it a water radiator?
Yes.
Okay. So, I mean, you can cap it, but, I mean, that's more plumber's work than anything.
Mm. Okay.
Because you have to drain the system and so on and so forth. Probably condensation is an issue, and the way you're going to know this is when you go into your garage and you look on the pipes, you see, traces of moisture on the pipe or some drips.
No, I don't see that.
You don't see that, okay.
I only see that they're rusted.
Yeah, so we have to know why they rusted. It's an inside location. What I would start with is to clean up the pipes.
Okay,
if it's just surface rust, and you could use a mix of water and vinegar. It doesn't have to. You don't have to go with any crazy solutions. Mm. Any like homemade,
water and vinegar.
Yeah, water and vinegar.
Okay,
a mix of water and vinegar, and just
how much water and how much vinegar?
I would say 1/3 vinegar, 2/3 water.
Jenny, how old's the house? How old are those pipes?
Oh, gosh, the house is about, it was built in 56.
Okay.
1956.
Mm. Okay.
Yeah.
So it's pretty old. But I never had a problem. Nothing is leaking. Mm. But they're rusted. Not completely rusted, but it doesn't look so good.
So here's what you're going to do. Try to rinse the metal, rinse it. Okay, and then what you want to do is you're going to dust with baking soda, okay? Leave the item leave it for about an hour in order to kind of take in swelling time.
Mm-hmm.
And then what you're going to do is you're going to use a metal brush and you're going to try to brush it out. And then you're going to use water and vinegar after that to kind of expose the pipe as much as possible. If you want to use a metal brush just to kind of help shaving out the rust, that is fine. Do not do a lot of shaking if possible. Don't disturb the pipe, because if there is a real corrosion, you don't want it to spring a leak. But that's what you would do in order to see how deep down the rust is in the pipe.
Okay, because I was told, somebody said to sand it, but maybe if I sand it, maybe it can collapse. I don't know.
No, don't.
Sand it and paint it after.
Okay. I wouldn't go straight to sanding because, again, this is metal, so it's not, and we don't know how brittle it is at this point. Try to go with the baking soda.
Just put baking soda
on? Yeah, you just put baking soda. Make sure it's a bit damp. Your pipe is a bit damp, so the baking soda sticks to it.
Mm.
Okay.
And then leave it for about an hour or so. And then after the baking soda is, after 1 hour, you can get a type of steel brush and you can just start sanding it like that and see.
Oh, but lightly sand.
That's right. And you want to avoid, like I said, you want to avoid shaking the pipe strongly and what have you. Just kind of, you know, gently get down to the bottom of the rust, and then we can evaluate how bad things are from there.
Jenny, who's doing that work?
Not me.
No.
No, not me. Right. Okay. And after that, I should put on water and vinegar. Is that it?
You could put down water and vinegar, or you can even use CLR. Like, if you want to just buy a product that have these types of cleaners, CLR would work as well.
Okay.
All right. All right. Well, Jenny, good luck with that.
Okay. And what about the, I want to close off the heater in the garage.
That is more, I would call a plumber for that. Because
okay, but
I
could call a plumber, but because I don't see a lever. So could he add a lever? Could he add something on there?
Usually they want to cap the system. You want to just remove it and cap it because, you know, it's a continuous flow. You might want to add like a shutoff valve for that, but it's complicated when it comes to opening and shutting it off and what have you, because again, it's a pressurized system, right? So that's why I would consult a plumber for that part. Another thing, word of caution is if you are not planning to heat your garage,
not planning to what?
To heat your garage.
Well, I don't want to. I want to save on heat. I don't need a heated garage.
Okay, but wait a minute. You do have feed pipes there, and that could, you know, cause your pipes to freeze. So
maybe I should just leave it.
Yeah, I mean, you solve one thing, but it's going to cost you a whole fortune the other side. So,
okay,
I mean, unheated garages is not, you know, I understand the concept of saving energy,
right,
but it's a dangerous concept if it's not studied and researched well.
Okay.
So
it's not such an easy thing just to shut it off.
It's not a question of an easy thing. You have pipes. I don't know what your plan is, but these pipes are going to definitely freeze if you in minus 30 and you don't have a heated garage.
Knowing our winters, eh?
Yeah. That's right.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Well, maybe I should just leave it the way it has been for years.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, then.
All right, Jenny. Hope we helped you out there a little bit.
Yes, thank you very much.
You're welcome. Good
okay,
luck with that.
Bye-bye.
All right. 514-790-0800. You know what we're going to do, Jimmy? Instead of taking another call here, what can we break now? And then the news is standing by. Then we'll come back and talk to Helena, Steve, and Mary Ellen right after this.
Whether you're handy or all thumbs, you're listening to the Home Improvement Show on CJAD 800.
Right back to the phones here. It's Ken Connors alongside Walter Assey from Renovco taking the calls. He's got his headphones back on, which means he wants to get back to work. So we're going to talk to Mary Ellen in DDO. Hi, Mary Ellen. Thanks for waiting.
Good morning.
A dip in the overhang of your roof. Tell us about it.
Well, I have an old cottage in the Lower Laurentians, and I had the shingles changed on the roof this summer. They told me that I have a dip in the overhang of the roof and that I need a carpenter to look at it before the winter. I know there's been a dip for many years. We had covered the overhang with vinyl underneath many years ago and never did anymore. No one ever said that or advised us that we should have something done. I'm wondering what is involved now to reinforce this overhang. Also, I'm wondering if I can wait till next year. I also had to have all the old insulation removed from the attic and basement and the spray foam installed, so that was quite a job and very expensive. And it's not easy to find people to do the work right now.
So is that overhang going to make it through the winter?
I love being on radio because I have to imagine things by telepathy.
Yeah,
what we're going to do is I'm going to ask you a few questions, Mary Ellen. If you can answer them for me, that will help me or will help us both out to figure it.
Yeah.
Now, is that overhang accessible from your attic?
I don't think so.
Meaning
they've closed everything up.
Okay, but is your attic accessible? Do you have a trap in the ceiling somewhere?
They put a new trap in when they changed the insulation.
Awesome. So that means we can go in the attic and people can walk around and check it out, right?
It's the spray foam they put, so I don't know if there's any beams there or anything to walk on. I can't see in there.
Okay. When they changed your shingles and they saw the dip, was the plywood rotted?
They never told me that.
Okay. Well, that's the issue. That's where it starts. Because these guys were in the best possible location to fix it for you at the minimal possible cost. Although they're not carpenters, and I do understand that, if they would have signaled it out for you while they're doing the roof, and you would have called in a carpenter, that carpenter would have cut off the plywood. Or even them, they're qualified enough to cut off plywood because they do change rotten plywood as they go. It's part of what they're supposed to do, is to change any rotted plywood. You can't put shingles right on top of that, right?
Mm. Yes. Well, actually, I asked them to do the work.
Yeah.
And I found out later that the partner of the roofer was a carpenter. And when I asked him to do the work, he said, oh, we're too busy. We don't do that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I mean, that's a bit of a weird situation because it is part of what they're supposed to do. Now, if they covered up a rotted plywood, it's really a problem. And that should really go down under their warranty. So it's one thing having a dip. Now, the idea is, why did we have the dip? What we've seen in cases is sometimes it's because you have a broken truss. So you have a roof truss that was broken, or there's just a bit of pressure in that area and that there's not enough wood trusses. So basically what's happening is the plywood sags in the middle. We've also seen cases where the truss itself works due to humidity and cold and hot difference in the attic, because part of it is covered with insulation, the other part is exposed. So, you know, the wood tend to warp and you know, cause certain movements in the shape of the roof itself. Okay, but we can't really narrow it down like that remotely. It is something that would have to be looked at a bit more closely now. If it's an area, what you might end up needing to do is to get a roofer back in, a decent roofer, a good a roofer that have a sense of professional pride, and ask him to cut off that area and expose it and look at it from above, because that will give us telltale signs of what's going on. And to be quite frank with you, it's if there is an issue, it's the easiest way to do it from that particular place.
Mm-hmm. I actually sent the roofer a text last week, and I said, you told me that I needed a carpenter. I said, can they do the work from underneath, or do they have to remove the shingles that you installed and change the plywood sheets? And he answered me in French, allô? Par en dessous de la corniche et non, ne pas besoin enlever les nouveaux bardeaux d'asphalte.
Okay, so he's saying it can be done from underneath. Depending on what we see, if you see rotted plywood, I don't see how the heck he's going to do it from underneath. It doesn't really work. If it's a question of reinforcing something or fixing a broken truss, it is possible. We just have to put plates on it, and it is possible from both sides to reinforce it. Adding a truss is another story. That doesn't work, but reinforcing one or fixing a broken one can work. So before we really know what the source of the problem is, it's very hard for us to tell, what needs to be done and from where.
Well, this is a professional roofer. This is in Gore. There's actually the person who refers the roofer to me. She's paid a fee to refer him to me. I don't know the exact amount she received, but I think it's over $1,000. And
Wait, repeat that again. She paid to refer him to you?
In Gore, there's a newsletter that comes out monthly, and this lady refers you to people to do the job. So she's paid a commission by the roofer, okay, which is included in the price to me. And I did call her at first, and she said, well, they don't work on soffits. Well, this isn't soffits, but anyway.
Hmm. Yeah. I mean, I don't know about these referral sites. There's, like in anything, the good, the bad, and the ugly, and some of them literally ask for very minimal accreditation to refer someone. So, you know, just because it's a site and they refer contractors does not really mean much. It can, you know, mean that you just want to get their commissions and they don't care who they refer. Like I said, in any business, there's good, bad, and ugly. So I can't really tell you, you know, and there's not really a great way to screen these things. You know, it's your experience and your professional experience. In your case, you had an issue and the guy pretty much left you high and dry. And that, for me, is not a professional roofer. Okay, he can know what he's doing, but there's something called professional conscience. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's you can't turn the other way and say, okay, you deal with it, and I'm out of here.
Yeah.
Okay? There's
Wouldn't
ways.
You think if they saw rotten plywood that they would have changed it?
I hope so. That's like, you know, roofing 101. You start by, I don't see how he would actually nail his shingles on rotted plywood. It just doesn't work. It doesn't work. And it's going to just be a question of time where it's going to leak.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So that's why I'm saying, you know, if someone can go through the attic, I know you said maybe it's not accessible. And if you're not sure, just start by there because it's the easiest way to see what's going on in that area. And if we can access it there and we could see it, that would be beautiful. You can really tell what's going on. And then you don't have to pay, you know, to uncover the roof again and mm-hmm. see what's going on.
You got to get someone in there to take a look, right?
That is correct.
The Mary Ellen.
Do you think when they took all the old insulation out, that they would have left, say, beams to walk on?
They're supposed to. They don't install anything really. They walk on what you have there, which is the trusses that you have on your roof, and that's what they will walk on. Mm-hmm. Now, my thing is,
there was a lot of boards that came out, and I don't know where they came from.
Mm. Now, the other thing you might need to do if you have is this like a tall structure? Like how is it? Two floors, one floor?
It's a 1.5 story.
Okay, so whoever comes to inspect it for you, ask them to bring in a ladder. And what they could do is uncover the soffits and see if they can peek through there to see if they can, if they could see anything if your attic is not accessible. That's another way of, you know, kind of minimizing the exploration damage.
Mary Ellen, we have to run. I hope that was some help for you. Good luck with that.
Okay, thank you.
Bye-bye now.
This is the Home Improvement Show on News Talk Radio, CJAD 800.
Certainly is. Ken Connors alongside Walter Assey from Renovco, answering your calls and handing out the advice and listening at 949. Steve, you still there?
Yes, I am.
All right, you're on the air with Walter. You want to talk about dual energy?
Yes.
Go ahead.
Walter, I have a dual energy system, electric and oil. And as you're aware, they passed some stupid law that will restrict the use of oil starting in 2025. And my oil system is the original from the house, which was built in 1960. But I have had some improvements done on the furnace, which I think about 40 years ago I had the burner changed. And about 15 years ago I had the entire firebox rebuilt and done. And my question is, if I read the law properly, I think as of December 2023, I will no longer be able to change my burner. So what I'm thinking of doing is changing my burner to a much more efficient burner, because my burner is made by Texaco, which I don't know if you're old enough to realize Texaco has been, it's like a company SO, but it's been gone for many, many, many years.
You're making us both feel old there, Steve. Thank
you. I don't know. Whoa, Ken, I don't know that company. So,
all right.
And, yeah, sorry, Steve, go ahead.
So I'm thinking that if I replace it with a much more efficient burner, that will help. First, in the consumption of oil, which I think this year is going to be excessively high, and will also extend the life of the furnace, because if it's after 2023, I won't be in a problem in changing burners.
Yeah, that is correct. So any major repairs will warrant you to change the whole furnace as of 2023. It's not a bad idea if you are planning to keep the oil furnace for a long time. What a lot of people are doing right now is they're keeping their dual energy, but they're shifting to natural gas or propane type heating, simply because it's a cleaner energy and and it's legal. You don't have to deal with these issues. The other thing that worries me the most is going to be the lack of parts and technicians. I'm sure a lot of these companies are not replenishing a lot of these parts because they know it's going to run out of, they're not going to be allowed to supply it anymore.
Right.
So if you are going to do a move like this, I would do it as fast as possible because, if I'm in that business, I'm now trying to just get rid of my inventory and kind of phase it out, right?
Right, and that's one of the comments that was made. I used to take a yearly and annual maintenance contract on both my furnace and my electrical system, but about 2 years ago, the people that serviced me said that there's no point in taking a service contract on your oil on your old oil furnace because the burner is so old. They do have the nozzles, which are the main part that gets changed, but he says if something other were to break in that old burner line, he said we would most probably wouldn't be able to get the parts or have old parts in stock.
That is correct. So that's why maybe it's a good idea to start planning the change of system at one point, but do it under your own rules rather than being forced to do it in the dead heat of winter just because you can't find a technician to find the part for it. It must be a very loud furnace, right?
As I said, what I do hear a bit is the circulating pump because it's a hot water system.
Oh, it's a hot water system. Okay, okay.
So the burner itself is it's quite quiet. My bedroom is above the furnace room and I don't hear the burner. I do sometimes hear the pump, but towards the end of the season, because after running so much it starts being a little bit noisier.
Yeah,
and that's something that I may change at the same time
Look. How much is it going to cost you?
I haven't investigated it yet.
Yeah. What I suggest you do is just get the price on it, and then get a price for a brand new furnace, propane or natural gas, depending on what you have in your area.
Okay. There's no natural gas.
Yeah. So you're gonna have to. You might have to go with propane, and just do the comparison. If it's like, if it's not a big amount difference, then just go with the whole swap, and you're going to get a very efficient furnace that's quiet, that's clean, that, that's to code. If it's going to cost you thousands of dollars, I don't know. If it's something that is a small investment, then by all means do it and just run that oil system to the ground.
One of my neighbors, about 2 years ago, I think it was, he had to change his burner because it went kaput, and it cost him $1,300. So, in today's prices, I'm not sure what it's going to be.
So that's not chump change, because you could probably get a furnace for about $4,000 or $5,000. $1,300 is a big amount of money. That's why I'm saying, get some quotations in and do that homework very attentively before you embark into changing the burner, especially if it's still working.
Yeah.
And is the cost savings, you think, of a new burner that's much more efficient?
Well, I know the new furnaces in general are way more efficient, okay? Right. Not only that, the heat pumps are very efficient. You install heat pumps now, they will work up to minus 30. So, there's a lot of advancement there, and that's why I would definitely look into that before.
Do heat pumps work with hot water furnaces?
No, they don't. Sorry, you have a hot... I keep on forgetting that you have a hot water system. Yeah. As far as savings are concerned, look into the prices of new furnaces and then do the comparison.
Okay. Very, very good suggestion.
Thank you, Steve.
Thank you very much.
Bye now.
Great show.
Thanks so much for that. 9:57. Do I have a minute? I have a minute. You know what? Helena and NDG, I know you waited a long time. We only have 60 seconds. Upstairs bathroom toilet water?
Yes.
Okay.
I have a toilet which I don't use very much because I'm alone. So every now and then, it's the second time, the water doesn't go in the tank of the toilet.
Okay.
So I open the sink, the water in the sink, and the water starts to go. Last night, did exactly the same thing. It was the second time it happened. And I opened the shower, because when I opened the sink, it went, started, but very, very low. As I opened the shower, all suddenly went normal. Hmm. What can I do about it?
Helena, I don't quite understand what's going on, to be quite frank with you. You're saying when you open your shower, the toilet fills up?
Yeah, the tank of the toilet fills.
You know
very
what?
Strange situation.
You
last
know,
time it happened, my kids were here, and they went to the washroom. And then I said, Ma, why the water doesn't work?
Mm.
I said, well, I didn't close, but let's see. I opened and closed, it didn't work. So as I opened the water in the sink, the water starts to go in the tank.
Okay, Helena, I'm going to ask you to hold 1 second. I'm going to talk to you off the air, all right? Hang on 1 second. It's 9:58. Walter, we ran out of racetrack.
Oh, sorry about that.
No, not at all. We'll talk to Walter again next Saturday morning between 9 and 10 on the Home Improvement Show. Lisa's standing by. So is News. Have a terrific Saturday. Jimmy, thank you. He's sticking around. He's going to take care of the board for another couple of hours. We'll talk to you again tomorrow morning as of 6:00.